Now, at least two Wisconsin school districts canceled classes on Friday as the country reacted to fake viral threats on social media. Many districts issued statements and increased police presence in response to claims of a trend on the social media app TikTok. Police officials across the state found the threats to be non-credible, but it raised questions about student safety and how school districts should handle these types of threats. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you see reports of these this TikTok alleged trend popping up maybe on your own social media? How did your local school district respond? Do you think it responded appropriately? If you work in a school district, how do you try to evaluate threats, whether they're a call to the school or some kind of vague social media meme? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Jillian Peterson is an associate professor of criminology and criminal justice at Hamline University and a co-founder of The Violence Project. Jillian, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I want to take us to the end of last week. We had these series of messages people were posting on TikTok, not threats, not even people saying, you know, they had seen threats, but saying, hey, this is a day when lots of people are going to be making these threats. Can you talk about that? What happened in the position that put school administrators in?
Yeah, we've seen across the country, really since about September this year, we've been tracking these threats, and we've seen a consistent rise in the number of threats that schools are getting across the country. And then in the weeks post the Oxford High School shooting, it really skyrocketed, where we were just seeing hundreds of threats per week that schools were having to navigate. Then this happened at the end of last week, where there was a TikTok challenge that declared Friday American School Shooting Day. And this went viral across the country, and schools were in this incredibly difficult position of having to figure out, is it credible? Is it not credible? How do we respond? And I think in the wake of the Oxford shooting, schools wanted to over-respond rather than under-respond.
Can you talk about what kind of things schools can do when they see a threat of whatever sort, as I mentioned, a threatening call or social media post targeting their school, a nationwide vague threat like we saw at the end of last week? What kind of things should be on the checklist of schools to try to figure out if this is credible or not?
Yeah, the most important thing is actually to put some systems in place before sort of a threat hits your school. So things like having reporting mechanisms, anonymous reporting mechanisms, ideally, that kids and parents can use, talking to kids in the school about the importance of reporting things, if they see something, to say something, and that report will be met with kind of care and concern rather than swift criminal charges. We want to increase kids reporting when they're noticing things. The ideal situation is have either a threat assessment team or a crisis intervention team, but a team of people at the school that includes public safety, school administrators, mental health professionals that can evaluate that threat in the context of that student's life or in the context of the school and figure out kind of the right way to move forward.
The worry on that side of things would be if there are so many non-credible threats. It seems like schools are going to be tying up a lot of resources and in staff and things like that, understandably so, in dealing with these things that aren't going to emerge as threats.
Yeah, and that's the sort of nightmare thing about this, is that schools are trying to educate our kids. They're strapped for resources. They have to choose between buying textbooks and buying, you know, surveillance technology. They're being put in this really difficult position of having to figure out, is each threat credible or not? What we do know from our research on mass shooters is that they do leak their plans ahead of time, and they do tend to threaten before they do it. We saw that just play out a few weeks ago. And so every time a threat happens, it has to be taken seriously. But knowing that the vast majority of them are going to be jokes or hoaxes and nothing to actually be worried about.
Talking to Jillian Peterson from the Violence Project and associate professor of criminology and criminal justice at Hamline University, looking at threats to schools, threats of school shootings, and how schools can respond and try to sort out non-credible from, sadly, credible threats. You could join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Is this something that you've experienced in your district, whether you're a student, a parent, a teacher, or staff at a school? Do you have systems in place, if you work in a school, to deal with these kinds of threats? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Pete is with us in Bondwell. Pete, hi.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about, Pete?
Yep. So in our school district, we received a somewhat vague general email that went out to all of the parents in the district that explained there was some sort of social media message going around that increased the perception of potential danger to the children, but we didn't get any detail, right? So we were able to use that email to initiate a conversation with our child, but it was really difficult to have that conversation without more detail, more facts. It was really hard to make that assessment and have a more productive conversation with our kid about what was happening, what's appropriate, what are the options, how are they feeling, what are they hearing. They did a good job as far as promoting the awareness, but I think in these situations, you know, if you're going to trust the parents to have those conversations, you know, equip them with all the detail that's available so we can, you know, dig into what are you seeing, what are you hearing, how do you want to deal with this.
And Pete, can I ask, how old is your kid?
He is 14.
Okay. And on Friday, if you made the decision for him to go to school, was it a more stressful school day for all concerned than usual?
He came out less than good. He had solid communication, and he helped. But,
Your line's breaking up, Pete. I'm sorry, but thank you so much for calling in and sharing that story. Jillian, an incident like this, the parent gets that notification, wonders what to tell their kid. There's a lot of stress there. Do you have thoughts on how to handle that, what schools should be telling parents in these situations?
Yeah, schools are in a really difficult position because a lot of times their hands are actually pretty tied about what they can even legally say about a situation, what they're allowed to say about another student. But we do know that the more communication, the more parents know, the better. Even if it makes them uncomfortable, even if it's the school kind of not trying to scare everyone, the more information, the better. And I think this also goes back to the importance of having these conversations ahead of time so that the community knows when our school gets a threat, here's the process. It's reported here, it's analyzed by these three people. We figure out if it's credible or not. We follow up with resources. We make an intervention plan so that parents kind of trust that the school has a system for handling this and knows how to handle it. So it doesn't feel like, you know, this is out of the blue and everybody is kind of terrified, because it's really scary. It's really anxiety provoking, not just for parents and kids, for teachers and staff. I've talked to, you know, teachers and principals across the country that are kind of at their wit's end already. And then you add in the threat of a school shooting and it's just overwhelming.
Pete, thanks so much for that call at 800-642-1234. Sorry, we lost your line there in your second response. Let's go now to Austin in Racine. Austin, hello.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Not much. How are you doing? What do you want to bring up, Austin?
So one thing that I noticed is earlier when you were talking about ways to, like, build up better environments in schools, just something for, like, everyone to think about is, like, involving police in this is categorically a bad idea, because, you know, we've seen when you involve a lot more police in the schools, students of color get disproportionately targeted. And also, cops have done nothing to stop school shootings that they are placed in. And what we need to do instead of bringing quote unquote law and order into this is we need to build better environments for students, you know? And that's what we just need to do, period, in communities.
Austin, thanks a lot for that call. Jillian, first of all, you and your colleagues at the Violence Project have looked at the role of police in school safety. What do we know?
Yeah, we did a study where we actually looked at schools where there was either carried out a school mass shooting or attempted mass shooting. And surprisingly, we found that schools that had school resource officers on the ground actually had more casualties than schools that didn't. The reason we think this is that over 90% of perpetrators of school shootings are students of that school. They are kids who are in crisis. They are actively suicidal. And typically a school shooting is sort of meant to be a suicide in addition to being a homicide. We've talked to perpetrators of school shootings who say the police officer there was actually the reason why I went, hoping that I would be killed in the act. Now, when it comes to threats, a lot of what the caller says is correct. We know that if somebody is in crisis, they're actively suicidal, they're making this threat. Our research shows it really is a cry for help. You don't say that publicly if you're not looking for someone to intervene. It's kind of this last ditch cry for help to see if anyone's listening. So the way we want to intervene is with resources, is with intervention, is really not things like criminal charges, which is just going to exacerbate the grievance with the school, exacerbate the crisis. Now, it's harder when there's an actual weapon involved. When there's an actual gun involved, then oftentimes the police do need to get involved. But if it's just a threat, there's a lot of different strategies that schools can use to figure out how to really holistically intervene to make sure that kid sort of gets off that pathway.
Austin, thanks for the call. We're talking about school threats and safety with Jillian Peterson, Associate Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at Hamline University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you worry about the role of social media and social media platforms, the way that threats can go viral online? What responsibility do they have to regulate online threats? What do you see in your own school district when it comes to how threats are reported, maybe to parents, to students, how these things are handled from your viewpoint as a student, a parent, a school staff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Hamline University criminal justice professor Jillian Peterson about threats and school safety. Jillian's co-founder of The Violence Project. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you've seen from your local school district and law enforcement when it comes to evaluating threats, credible, non-credible? Has this issue come up in your school in the last week, in the last few months? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jillian, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line, but wanted to share a story. Her son was kicked out, she says, of school for making a threat. She says he needs mental health resources, but the school doesn't have them, and the only tool they seem to have is suspensions. Wondering what can be done to help out those kids. Obviously, traumatic for all the kids involved and for the mom in this case. Jillian, what kind of resources do schools need?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of times what the school has at their disposal is things like suspensions, expulsions, criminal charges. Our research on mass shooters, what we know they have in common is that they often have trauma histories. They are in an active crisis, they're suicidal, they really need mental health intervention. That, you know, excluding a child, pushing them out, it really just makes matters worse. But a lot of schools just don't have those resources in place. So when we think about how do we make our schools safer, what does public safety look like? I think things like mental wellness, you know, school counselors, school social workers, school-based mental health has to be a really important part of that discussion. That's just as much school safety and may, in fact, be more effective than things like, you know, security cameras and metal detectors at the doors.
We had our caller Austin earlier saying he would want to see schools create a better environment. One, I imagine, where kids could come forward to say, hey, I need help, where kids could report potential problems without fear of, as you mentioned earlier, kind of retaliation against the student who's making suspected threats. What kind of culture would you like to see in schools in addition to the research resources you were just talking about?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. So in a lot of the cases we've studied, you know, there were school shooting cases where 50 kids knew it was going to happen and nobody told an adult. And so we really need warm, welcoming environments with really strong and trusting relationships between students and adults in the building. kids are having such a hard time right now. They're in crisis in so many ways coming out of this pandemic that they really need adults who have the time and energy and space to kind of listen to them, to notice when things are off or when things are different, to have systems in place where they can report students that they're concerned about and that somebody will follow up. So anything we can do to really build those strong, trusting relationships, that's another really important piece of violence prevention.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Brian is on the line in Hollandale. Brian, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Brian?
A couple months ago on Facebook and other social media, I believe it was, they had the Dads in School group in Louisiana. I don't know if you guys remember that or not. It was the school district that had like 30-some fights in a couple of weeks.
Right, Brian, I have seen that, Jillian. I've seen headlines of, as our caller was saying, dads showing up to kind of just be there, be a presence in schools. I think the report on Louisiana saw at least a short-term turnaround on violence. What do you think of the idea of volunteer parents on campus maybe being that extra set of eyes, but maybe that trusted adult who somebody could talk to?
You know, I think schools need all the help they can get, and certainly parents are a really important partner in all of this. So kind of the more adults around that students can go to, that they can have conversations with, the more people around that can de-escalate situations, that can notice kids in crisis, that's all going to be better. We know that, you know, schools really need more resources right now, and if that's volunteers and if that's parents, that's fantastic.
Thanks for the call, Brian, at 800-642-1234. We're talking about the ways that schools deal with threats, individual threats, wider spread social media threats of school violence. Jillian Peterson is with us from Hanlon University, co-founder of the Violence Project. Jillian, one response we've seen in schools around the country is a lot of investment in safety technologies, different kinds of door locks and surveillance systems and things like that. Again, you and your colleagues have looked at that. What do we know about whether those investments are paying off?
Yeah, in the book we published this fall called The Violence Project, we have a whole section where we look at this kind of whole school security industry. And it's a $3 billion industry. It's massive. Again, it goes back to the fact that the most likely perpetrator by far is a student of that school. The student is in the building. They are going in and out of these doors and these systems every day. They know exactly how everything works. They're running through all the active shooter drills. They know where the SRO is located. These are insiders, not outsiders. In some ways, it makes it a lot harder to prevent because all of that technology is based on the fact that it's an outsider coming in. But in some ways, it makes it easier because we can think about what sorts of systems and things do we need in our school to make sure none of these kids are going to want to do this.
We had another caller who couldn't stay on the line. Just wonders how parents should go about talking to their children about these kinds of issues. This could be a whole separate conversation, but when it comes to safety in particular, what do you want to see parents talking to their kids about when it comes to reporting potential threats?
Yeah, I think just opening up those lines of conversation about how they're doing with this. This increases anxiety. This can make kids feel really afraid. And so opening up those conversations, we know just getting kids talking is actually really helpful, but also talking to kids about the importance of when they notice something is off with a friend or when they see something that concerns them, who do they report, how do they report, and why do they report? Also for parents, there's really this sort of critical component of safe storage of firearms. We know that kids who do this almost always use guns they take from their parents. So schools encouraging safe storage campaigns is another thing that parents can do within their own home.
I want to bring things around back to social media platforms that kind of kicked off our conversation with this alleged TikTok trend last week. Are there things that we can learn from this that you'd like to see maybe the social media platforms themselves do differently?
There are, and I think we're just getting started on these conversations with social media companies and what is their responsibility for things that go viral on their own platforms. You know, schools across the country cannot shut down every time there's a threat that goes viral on social media. So I think what role do social media companies play in this and what's their responsibility is a huge question. kids, we know a really important part of the equation when it comes to school shooters is this kind of social validation, that they look for people on social media that are validating their thinking, that are telling them it's a good idea. They're in chat rooms, they're in the dark corners of the internet. And so if social media companies are providing that validation to kids that this is okay and this is normalizing, you know, that is something we really need a bigger national conversation about.
Just in our last couple minutes or so, what kind of things would you encourage school leaders to be doing right now to start to get the systems in place that you're hoping to see?
Yeah, I think creating just a reporting mechanism. It can be as simple as an email address or a Google form. Getting a team in place, a formal team that can assess these threats that they come in, and making sure that they have their communication systems in place. And so that everybody in the school, the kids, the staff, the parents, know how to report concerns and understand how they're going to be evaluated and dealt with.
And we've got, of course, this pandemic. We're just coming in a lot of these schools out of a long time of kids not being in the schools. Has that thrown whole new wrinkles into how we think about threats?
It really has. Because all the risk factors for violence, things like isolation and hopelessness and long times online, have really gone through the roof in the pandemic. And also, teachers are really good at noticing when kids are off, kind of noticing when there's a change in behavior from baseline. But having not been around kids for so long, we really don't know the baseline of these kids. So it's hard to assess when something seems off. So it just makes this whole thing so much harder.
Jillian, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Jillian Peterson is an associate professor of criminology and criminal justice at Hamline University, co-founder of The Violence Project, and co-author of a book called The Violence Project. We talked to her and her co-author earlier this year. You can find that conversation in our archives at WPR.org. She joined us today for a look at threats of school violence on social media and how schools can assess the risks when there is a threat, sometimes even a vague threat like that.